none of it counted until now.
All right.
That was all nonsense. How are you doing, Andrew Hollinger? Hollinger.
Hollinger.
Hollinger?
Nice and German.
Okay, great.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to fuck it up.
I get Hollinger a lot.
I would imagine there's a little bit of like curiosity about that consonant you get.
Yeah.
People mess around with that.
I just keep it j nice and...
I love that.
Nice and strong.
I love this, dude. I'm really excited to talk to you because I have been talking to a lot of friends, like people I knew at school and shit. And I don't know you at all. I'm going to like listen to our levels while we start here. But I don't know like anything about you.
Yeah, man, let's get into it. let's do a proper therapy session here.
There we go. That's
we a sound bit good.
Better.
Yeah.
Yeah, count to five for me.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There we go. Now we're even. It was a little off. Yeah, no, therapy for sure. My wife's an actual therapist, so if you, when we're done, you nice. Can, we can get both of them in for you.
That might be good. You know? She could just and listen then, to this episode and
yeah, and analyze. Then we'll actually, our house will actually make some money off the whole situation as opposed to this pro bono nonsense I've been doing on this podcast since 2014.
No, you're paying me, right?
Oh,
right.
Shit. We should have talked more before you got over here. So yeah, I don't know like anything about you. I did see you the other day.
Yeah.
Really randomly here in Los Angeles where we both live at a film festival that we did not know anyone and it wasn't NCSA related at
not
all.
Not at all.
We just happened to see each other.
A girl who directed one of the movies randomly produced a movie that I wrote and produced, which that was UNCSA connected.
Okay.
So I knew her from that and yeah. And how did you,
the lady who produces that, she, that you're talking about, what's her name?
Gabby.
Gabby. Did she go to School of the Arts?
No.
Okay.
But she knows Mondo Alvarado.
Okay.
Who was an alumni from 95.
Got it.
Yeah. Yeah. He's my, assigned mentor at graduation.
Assigned mentor?
Yeah, they started doing that.
We're going to get into that shit.
Where it actually ended up working really great. I mean, he was super generous, and we've gotten to know each other super well.
Sounds really familiar. Did he do summer session? Like teach acting and stuff like that, maybe?
Jose Aranda.
That's maybe who I'm thinking of,
yeah.
Who I also like met once. I don't know him
He's
super
amazing.
Well either. He's pretty cool,
yeah,
though,
yeah.
I've heard.
Great teacher.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So let's get into about, well, I want to talk about Andrew because we could talk about all these other alumni on another day, my friend. I want to figure out something about you before this is over. Where are you from?
I grew up in Oregon, lived there for 10 years in Portland, and then moved to Houston.
When you were 10?
Sixth grade. So 12?
Yeah, so like a 12. 11, yeah, something like
10.
That.
Somewhere in there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Very formative time, you know, it was halfway through sixth grade. I had done elementary school and then sixth grade is when all the kids come together and I was like, had my girlfriend, was like on the football team.
You had like a good middle school.
I was riding high and then...
Dude, that's crazy. You recognize as someone who had that experience how rare that is?
Well,
you talk to
let
people?
Me get you there because that was halfway through sixth grade and then I moved to Texas.
Oh, this was all happening in Oregon.
That's
it was
right.
Dope.
That's right.
Oh shit.
And maybe
now
it's
I'm
like
scared.
My rose-rimmed glasses, but it was
okay.
It was
in contrast to what you were about to deal with in Houston, Texas.
Yeah, it was horrible.
Got it.
And so then moved there and a small town of the Woodlands. It's like a suburb of Houston. Quite a bubble. I mean,
it is a very nice suburb of Houston.
It is very
the
well
Woodlands
planned.
Is famously like a kind of a bougie ass place to grow up, man.
Yeah, I think yeah.
From where when I grew, I'm from Austin.
Oh yeah, you know.
So the Woodlands, I'm like that already. I didn't even grow up in Houston, but I know the Woodlands.
Yeah,
that's kind of a bougie ass.
One of the late night. One of the late night people called it like the most the parking lot was like called it the snobbiest high school in America or something.
So. There you go. All right. So there's a little context for where you got transplanted to.
Yeah.
Was it like that? Your vibe in Oregon before then with your family, you guys living in a really nice neighborhood,
no,
really nice
not
schools,
at all.
Or was it more working class or?
Yeah. I mean, it was a suburb for sure, but it was very much like the neighborhood got built with this, with my family and other, you know, the other families were the first time homeowners and,
What do your parents do for a living?
My dad is retired now. He was...
What were they doing then?
In Oregon, he was president of like a circuit board company.
Okay.
And then...
Manufacturing?
Yeah, yeah.
Got it.
And they would provide circuit boards like to computers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's like actually a lot of political conversations about that right now. Like that's part
Really?
Of... Yeah, and we don't have to get into it at all because it's not super interesting. But it's so funny that that back then was something that your dad was doing. It sounds so mind-numbingly boring to talk about circuit boards.
Right.
But... that's like a real thing that we're having a big political conversation about the fact that we are going to start manufacturing circuit boards in America again. And we haven't
right.
been for a long time.
Okay.
So that's like a, yeah, it's actually a relevant thing that's going on. When did your dad quit helping people get circuit boards?
That was in 2008. And then he moved into the oil and gas industry.
Oil and gas in Houston. Pretty
that's
good.
That's right. It's the stereotype.
You work sure. in that business, you get yourself a place in the Woodlands, damn it.
Exactly.
So what was the experience like that was unpleasant for you as far as like it felt really dope in Oregon, maybe because you'd built all these relationships or maybe because the culture was different, but you got to Houston. I'm quite a bit older than you, but I'm not far away geographically from as far as like how you grew up and
yeah.
the school system can't have been that different. So I kind of get what you're talking about.
Big school.
Well, it's too big.
Yeah. I mean, and it was also just the sense that like they had all kind of grown up with each other. And so I definitely
can't escape that,
you know, that was kind of was going to be the case regardless, but yeah. And I don't even know if I was aware of like the political climate at the time, but it was just quite, yeah, like I just didn't feel.
What year did you make that move? Out of curiosity,
2008.
Oh yeah, yeah. Shit!
This is a big year.
Yeah, pretty tumultuous yeah. time.
Yeah, yeah.
In America in general,
right? And I guess I didn't. I just took for granted how diverse and welcoming everybody in Oregon was, and like just felt like a super cool community. And then in Houston, it was very much. Yeah, I mean, I could get into my like bullying stories if you want, like in sixth grade.
If you think it's a a part of like why you do what you do now,
for sure. I mean, for sure, it was like, I mean, it was. I think I am in therapy, so this is kind of what I've kind of boiled that time down to is that I was looking for a place of, you know, belonging, and I didn't really have that in any type of community, even doing theater at that age or doing sports. It was like, I never felt super welcomed. And
when did you start doing those two things?
Like how old were you? Sports was like young.
You started that first.
Yeah. Did, you know, baseball, basketball, played all the sports
and then league stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got it.
And then, but again, in Texas, it was not like you could do multiple things. It was kind of like, all right, pick your lane because there's 1,000 kids in this class.
It is so, like that. And even at the middle school level, and I think I've told some stories about this, but it's kind of interesting. I found out this just like wasn't the case everywhere. Because a lot of the public schools in Texas are so big, even the electives, as soon as you get to electives, which is like sixth grade, it's the first time you get right. to start picking, like, what do you want to do for an art or a PE or a whatever? Like, a lot of schools start at that level. Like, you get to start picking stuff.
Yeah.
And before then, you just go every day to one room, and then they'll send you home. And then you could show up to middle school, and they're like, what do you want to do? And you're like, what the fuck did you just yeah. say to me? Like, okay. But a lot of those Texas schools that have that, it's like college.
Right.
There's limits.
Right.
There's only so many kids who can do this or that. And so they have to figure out a way of like, okay, well, how do we figure out who gets to play the drums? Everyone wants to play the drums. No one wants to play the fucking trumpet.
Right.
So how do we have a band? We can't have 45 drummers and no brass section.
Right.
And so they have to cap it. And so you end up with these like auditions when you're 12 or 11 right. to do these things, whether it's sports. Of course, that makes sense. We all think of that, right?
Sure.
We're like, oh, you got to try out for the team.
Right.
Right. Everyone right. wants to be on the team. Well, you're not good enough to be on team. Yeah. You can't. But in Texas, even the art shit is like, are you good enough to be on the fucking team? You got to try out for the team
right.
at 11, which is kind of a lot of pressure.
and super cutthroat. And
you're in that position.
Yeah. I mean, I was just lucky that they liked me as an actor. And so I was
so
kind
you
of
got
like,
to do the theater shit.
I was like, all right, like this is what I'm good at, I guess.
So you're starting like 12, 13 with being on stage and stuff, but yeah. That's not giving you the comfort, the home, the community. Like where's that gap, do you think?
Yeah, I don't know.
Cause that's where I found it. That's the only reason I asked that question is because for me, I moved around a lot, not across the country, but in Texas. I kept changing neighborhoods.
I remember you saying that you went to a bunch of different schools.
So when I found theater, it was like, oh shit, this is a thing where it's like, I never really clicked with religion, but we can meet up, we can study some shit.
And I felt that obviously the draw to theater as an art form, but I think maybe I was just like a dick. Like I was just like, I don't know. Like I just like, maybe was thought I was like hot shit, and I don't know.
Do you think people would say that about you now? Have people said that to you that you're like you came in, Mister? I'm from
now,
Oregon.
Like I'm a little better, but back then it was like I don't know. I think I was
a guy named Barack Obama just got elected, and I'm from Oregon, so I think I'm a little bit more with the times, Houston,
that's right,
Texas.
That's right. All you Republicans
should have been in Austin, man. That's
but
a
I think
weird
it was
move.
Just like that. Maybe they were just like some of the kids were just doing it for fun. And I was kind of like, what do you mean? Like this, you know, at that point I was already like really, I took very seriously. And I still am that way with anything. That's like a good time. I'm like, but we're having fun. Like we're being really serious about this. I'm very serious about having a good time. So maybe everybody was kind of like, all right, Andrew, like,
sure.
You know, relax. Like you're, you know, this is just like a hobby and
I was a little bit like that. I can relate.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm struggling to admit it. I can feel it in my voice. I don't want to say that that's true, but I remember, and I think it was because I needed it so much that I wanted it to, I was like, you guys are just like doing this because you can't paint or don't want to dance or something. Sure. Like I'm like here to learn how to be in this.
Right.
And you guys, I'm doing it when I leave. I'm going to community theater and trying to audition and do stuff like that. So even theater class, instead of treating it like you should treat an acting class now, which is like, get what you can get out of it.
Right.
But then it was like, you're a bunch of amateurs around here, you know, like not
wearing
taking
my fedora,
this.
Like...
My friend Brandon, who I just put his episode out recently. He had a whole dude. He changed his wardrobe because of theater.
Yeah.
He was like, I'm gonna wear black all the time. Turtlenecks every day in Texas.
Right.
Like, because I'm the theater kid. Cause we needed that to be our identity. And it sucked when there was like a basketball guy who needed an art credit in the class. Who was like,
yeah,
what is it? Oh yeah. I didn't read this. You do lines.
Yeah, exactly.
So did you go to a high school where theater was like a big deal? They had like a big department. They
did
like huge plays.
Yeah, I would say
for
sure. And we did like the UIL.
One act.
The one act competitive. Fuck yeah. And we were pretty good. Like we went to like the regionals and the state a couple times. Like
hell yeah, dude.
Yeah, and I did that.
You got
and
some
I
best acties?
I got a couple.
Some supporting acties?
A couple, yeah, couple. A couple all-star casts
hell
as
yeah,
well.
Hell yeah, dog.
Yeah, yeah. But before we get too far into high school, after my freshman year, I met Jose Aranda because I went to the summer session and that really was where I felt that community, that belonging, like in a way that I hadn't in Texas. And so I was sold on UNCSA at that point. And
it's so cool that you have that. And you know, what's crazy is that fucking Houston always had this hookup.
Robert Beseda.
Huge part of it.
Yeah.
Huge part of it. And then, what's her name? Joanne Woodward, right?
Oh yeah. I never did that, but
she's
David
not the
Gow
only
and...
pipeline out of Houston. She's one of several, but she's a pipeline out of Houston into School of the Arts, this dope program, including the high school thing.
Yeah.
And it's so crazy because once I ended up at School of the Arts, I was like, man, I went to two different school districts in Austin.
Right.
Pflugerville and Round Rock, like two different suburban school districts. And I knew the people at all the high schools and there was no hookup, man. They were all like, you should go to Texas State. You should go to SFA.
Right.
You should go to like these state school, like liberal arts, you know, do some plays while you're there.
Right.
School. And no one ever tapped me on the shoulder, even at a UIL thing. The best thing I got, dude, when I graduated We did The Crucible high school. We did, our one act was The Crucible. I was John Proctor.
That's right.
I got best actor, right? Yeah. Boom, right? Nailed it. Where's my scholarship? Because I am not good at school, right? I did great at the other thing. Someone, is there some recruiter? Is there someone coming? I really thought that would do something. Because totally. I had no hopes of going to fucking college. And dude, nothing. Where are the scouts at that shit?
Where is the hookup? It feels so serious.
It does. And then it pays off in no way. Yeah. And they're like, and then when this one guy's like, you should come to my community college in Athens, Texas, outside Tyler. Outside Tyler. If you guys know about Tyler, it's not a city.
It's not Austin.
No, it's a town.
Yeah.
And then they're like, outside of that, you can come to our school. That's, and it's like, that. You don't even apply. You enroll. It's a community college. Right. Like, I don't understand. And then I got to North Carolina and I was like, what the fuck? Houston is not even as cool and artsy as Austin. Right. And you guys have like all these different ways to get to like North Carolina or Juilliard or whatever.
Super random.
It's so, well, so it how did you so end better
up,
about it.
How did you end up at UNCSA then?
Oh, that's like a million different already recorded episodes. But the short version of it is my friend Brandon Harris, he found out about Unifieds.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't know anything about it. And because I was kind of a super underachiever in high school, he kind of got on this path of like shit that he didn't always include me in, which I didn't earn it, to be honest. But I was kind of bitter. He was like, I went audition for all these schools. And I was like, what the fuck? He was like, well, a lot of them aren't even going to listen to you because your grades are so shit and right. you've never taken the SAT. So like, I don't know how to bring you on this trip,
right.
which is totally fair, but I didn't get it at the time. But anyway, he walked by the fucking table, man. The no Bobs way. Were there and he had no planned audition for the school. He was there to do like Carnegie Mellon, Juilliard and a bunch of different schools. And he had applications in already and appointments.
Right.
And he went into basically with the Bobs to practice.
No way.
Yeah. He was like, I don't, what is this? I've never heard of North Carolina, whatever.
Right.
He was like, but I need to get my fucking shit together for Juilliard.
Right.
And so he went in. And did it because he didn't give a fuck.
Right.
And then he went and bombed his Juilliard audition. Right. And then later he got a call of like, do you want to come to North Carolina? And it was like, what? Hold on. Google. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Like that was his experience. He like got in and then found out because he just didn't. But it's a great story about like he got into the school where he was like, I don't care about how this audition works right. out, which is can't learn that lesson unless you learn it, I think, through experience.
Totally.
And he's my best friend, and I was adrift, and then eventually he was my pathway to school.
He brought you in. Okay, yeah. Right on.
Initially in DMP, and then eventually in drama. Yeah, I started as a writing designer. Anyway, you went to the high school program, though. We were talking about that earlier.
Yeah.
So you left Houston at the end of junior year.
Yeah, I was ready. I was ready to get like, out.
Get the fuck out of this town and let me go away to the magical land where everyone gets me. I've already been there, right? Because you did summer session.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, so, I dig the vibe. I get to basically do college early.
And Kelly Maxner was great. And he had seen, I did like a Texas all-state show where there's like kids from all over. And we performed in Nebraska at the International Thespian Festival. And Kelly was there. And so that was kind of the initial kind of like, hey man, like I'm gonna audition. He's like, great. And yeah, it was super cool. Like, you know, a long summer camp of a year, you know?
Right. Dude, that's so dope. And I was so jealous of that when I got there again. I found, it's like, this exists?
Right.
What the fuck?
I know.
I thought, I slept like on the theater floor in the morning because it was like, I got to school too early and it was the only place I felt comfortable. I just like literally lived in that place and no one was ever like, there's one you can literally live at.
Right.
You don't have to sleep on the floor. They'll give you a bed.
Right.
It's crazy. And I'm like, yeah, in college. They're like, in high school.
Yeah.
I'm like, what?
They were not looking out.
There was just no conversation like that.
Damn.
So I hope it's happening more for people.
It's so important.
So you start 2014. Right, you
said? Yeah, well, graduated high school in 2014, yeah. So that's when I started college as well.
In the fall. So we just like barely, because I was still transitioning out here is one of the only reasons we met.
Yeah.
Which is such a rare happenstance. And one of the reasons why when I saw you, recently. I even knew who the fuck you were.
Right. Yeah.
Just so random. And now we're getting to know each other, which is cool. But you said you've already listened to this show, which is awesome.
That's right.
So
I'm a big fan. Yeah. And that was kind of initial, you know, first year, like listening to interviews with Sconey and Mary Irwin. It was, you know, who were both just untouchable at that point.
You know? And you also maybe didn't even know at that time that there was, because did you have both of them the whole time you were there?
I was lucky. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
They both left right after you left.
Our Mary, I think, like my fourth year was just doing like once a week with us. It was like,
right.
That was
she
like
had
her
transitioned
last.
To like, yeah, yeah, got it.
Which was, you know, I'm so lucky because they were both hugely, I would say, the most influential, those two.
What was it like for you? And you know, if you've listened to this show, then you know, we'll go on and on about school. But one thing that I'm curious about, because you have a unique experience along with your classmates. The school has had the drama school and the chancellor, but I'm really talking about the dean of the drama school, has had a few different eras, right?
Yeah.
And I came in at the very end of one of its longest eras, like the fucking FDR of the school of drama that just kept being in charge of it for like a crazy long time. And he was literally in a wheelchair when he was teaching me.
Yeah.
FDR style. And it was a very specific experience to be coming off of like 20 years of everybody knowing him in this certain way and him being this person to like Mary Louise Parker and all these different people from not recently, like to all these people. And then you would get to really know Gerald in particular and Robert Bessette. And you're like, whoa, the legacy that these people bring from what they've done in their life. And it's totally crazy. That guy picked me to be at the school and then he had a stroke and this new version of him kind of had to emerge as a result of that. And that's the Gerald I really ended up getting to know the best before he ultimately passed.
Yeah.
And everybody knew him as this other person from before. And then he went away. And right as I'm a senior, Carl Forsman is the new dean. And we actually had our class interview a bunch of different potential deans. We like talked to Terrence Mann as a group. And we talked to, I'm not gonna sign an NDA. We talked to Sharon Ott, who I think was at SCAD at the time. All these really fascinating people in our class. Essentially, it's not that we picked him because that's not how it worked. But we said Carl pretty unanimously.
Yeah,
out of everybody we talked to, he ended up becoming our dean. He ended up becoming my co-directing teacher.
Right.
And now this is totally new guy who is in charge.
Yeah.
When did
That was my fourth year. So it was kind of similar deal. Like after third year, everybody kind of...
Fourth year, you're dealing with a total change of arms,
which
right?
is not ideal.
I mean,
and like our fourth year, he wasn't even like the guy. Like it was like he's coming around once a week. Dale was our interim dean.
And so but truthfully, man, and this is what I always stress to people, the Gerald thing was weird. It was FDR. Carl, it makes more sense... Like maybe in how long someone should run a program that to maybe a decade or so. And then we should 20 years creates a really strange dynamic.
Totally.
And that's what I want to ask you about. What was it like for you to be fully in the shadow of the Gerald Friedman School of Drama,
Absolutely. But
to have no contact with him because he wasn't doing stuff at the school, but showing up to a play in the front row from time to time.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So like, what's that like for you?
It was super interesting because obviously like there is that legacy. And so it's almost like, not that they were like gatekeeping, but again, with like Mary and Bob, Francisconi, it was very clear that this was a storied tradition, you know, these classes. And I would say that there was definitely some like pushback, you know, to the new way and ultimately, I think Carl was a super transition that needed to happen. And then now I think he would probably say that he's happier as an acting teacher. And Scott, coming from Harvard, you know, really brought the brought the U to the UNCSA and really has turned it into a proper university. So I don't know if that's really what you're looking for, but
no, I'm interested in what that means to you. What do you mean by proper university versus what?
Well, I would say he just the way that he dealt with conflict and like, you know, talked about the Me Too movement and like really brought the whole industry and like the world perspective like into this program, like in a way that felt, I mean, again, like he came from Harvard, so it was like it very much felt like I don't want to use the word woke because that's not what I'm saying, but just that it was very like he was with the times.
There was a consciousness of some of the things that we need to be conscious of that maybe we weren't before, right? Is the most general way to put it.
And just like with diversity and with all that stuff, sure. Like he had those conversations in a way that felt really productive and was right. Like, okay, like,
and didn't feel like it was at the cost of merit, which is everyone's fear.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Anyone who pushes back on the concept of diversity or inclusion, which I think this is a reasonable argument sometimes, but the obvious elephant in the room argument they always have is someone else who deserves an opportunity or should have a chance to blah, 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 whatever is not going to get it, who deserves it because they're good. It's going to go to someone else because of who they are.
Right.
And that I think is like a fair conversation to have because you could theoretically do that.
Sure.
You could be like, let's just give it to people who are blah, 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 instead of who can blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
That could happen. More likely, usually that's not what's happening.
Right.
And we've been so far in one direction for so long, I think it's fine for us to push around and pendulum, you
and
know, and figure
pains,
that out.
For sure.
So it's cool. And I've never talked to Scott directly. I've only like observed some different stuff that he's done from a distance as far as like alumni things and the, you know, they're doing stuff during the pandemic. That was what I was going to say. Mm. He has had the bizarre experience of navigating these two things. The first thing was as soon as he took over, we got the Me Too movement is rocking the entire industry. And he's taking over for someone who's been running a program for 20 years, kind of the way he started it 20 years ago, without changing a lot of stuff.
Right.
Because it was a conservatory and it was like, it's tried and true
tradition.
And it works. It's traditional. And in that way, conservative.
Sure.
Because it's not.
In the word.
Yeah. It's not progressively being like, how else could we constantly be twisting this in a big way to change things. It's like, maybe I'll take a note from time to time. Someone will quit. We'll get someone new. That'll shake it up. Mm. But like mostly it's kind of the same thing for like really fucking long time.
Right.
And even some of the people there were from before that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of been the same thing for a really long time.
Which I think makes, you know, great actors, like you're in a bubble and it's like very, you know, you're very serious. But the thing that I felt Scott brought was like, you know, he's like, no, you need to make your own work. No, you need to, you know, you need to come out and you need to be like a fully, functional human as well. Which I don't necessarily know that I learned that at the time, but then like, you know, a couple years after graduation, I was like, okay, like, you know, it's not enough just for me to be like a really serious actor.
Let me ask you this, and this will, we can move on after this is my last question. And I'm gonna start asking some more people who have this experience. I've just came up with this, like, thing I want to start asking people if it applies to them. While you're at school, you had two different deans, right?
Yeah.
You had one more than the other. If you could go back and have one for the whole time and you had to pick one, which would it be? No feelings hurt, training only. This is just about training. It's not about who you like and all that kind of stuff. It's like, you want to get the most for your fucking money. You're paying for this product at the end of the day. So if you could go back and you had to pick Carl the whole time or Scott the whole time, just purely on training, what do you think would be best for Andrew? Based on what you know now about what you want to do.
Right. I would say Scott for sure.
Yeah.
And just leaning into the two big things that I think has happened and didn't really happen with us, but I've observed from the next classes is the on-camera training and the creating your own work, which is pretty much exactly what I'm doing. And then having Carl as an acting teacher, I think, you know, he's a great acting teacher.
Right. I think we both won.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think getting both is almost better.
Right.
Honestly, I wouldn't trade it.
No,
I give you the call because I think it's tough to make, because I think the easiest call is you want fucking both.
Right.
Because they both brought totally different great shit.
Yeah.
Or they never would have been picked to do that awesome Absolutely. Job. Yeah. And I feel the same way. I would not. And, you know, I've talked to all sorts of different people about this. I would not trade my specific education I got for anything. I wouldn't give up starting in DMP for starting in the drama program. I wouldn't give up. I would trade Gerald being coherent.
Sure.
But like, I wouldn't trade having him and then also senior year having Carl come in and breathe this like youth into the things that I was learning.
Right.
Because I was learning about some old shit, man. Yeah. And it was great. And it was like, felt like fundamentals, traditional, like you said. Yeah. And I felt like the concrete for my whole artistic being was being really filled in and like made sturdy. But then I was starting to look up and be like, what do I build on top of this? I fucking didn't learn that here.
Right.
I know how if you gave me something, I could whatever, but what do I do? And other than like intensive arts, I wasn't really right. thinking like that.
Right.
And Carl, man, he was a huge part of like, so what are you gonna do?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, right. Yeah. Let me get back to thinking about that.
Right.
And can you blame like a 90-year-old guy for not thinking super far ahead in right. the future?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. He knows how to train actors
right.
and directors. But yeah, that's a really good point. And I think that's just, you know, the more perspectives, the better, I think. You know, it's like
always, dude.
You can pick and choose from, yeah, it's like, yeah, because it's such a subjective form, you know? It's
yeah.
like that. Yeah, that's why I love still taking classes. I think I'm maybe to a fault, like, I'm like taking so many classes. I think I need to maybe just live some life, you know? It's like, yeah. All right, I know how to act now. Like,
did you feel like when you got out of school, you were like, now that structure was giving me something, and so I don't want to give that up. So like, yeah. I keep going to classes.
For sure. And it's just like, it's, I feel like now finally almost 5 years out, I'm like, I now know how to fill my day every day to feel like I'm progressing, you know, because at school, it's like, I mean, that was the biggest thing that they couldn't teach you, is that you're doing it for 12 hours a day, and then you get out of school and it's like, all right, you know, nobody's asking you to do it. So how are you going to fill these days and like actually feel like you're moving in the right direction? And if I have a day where I don't do anything, like, am I a failure? Like, you know,
God damn, dude. Yeah,
I know.
That's intense. One day.
Well, no, I know exactly. But I'm saying like that maybe was my,
God rested on one day. Come on.
No, I definitely did plenty of resting.
Yeah.
But I maybe felt bad about it. I don't know.
So when you were in high school and you're doing one act plays, because at the time we were both in, you know, the early 2000s, I guess I'll say, it can't be that fucking different now. But there's a really intense structure to learn how to do theater in Texas, actually. It's really set up, especially at the high school level, because of the one act plays.
And right.
A lot of the schools actually make quite a bit of money off doing like a musical every year or whatever. So there's some structure to learn that, but there's not a lot of ways to learn like film, television, self-produced stuff. That's still, they're trying to figure that out at that level. You're lucky right. if you can learn it in college.
Right.
So when you're doing plays and you're learning theater and you're acting and stuff like that, you've got a certain kind of ambition that takes you to North Carolina. You're learning this kind of classical, nuanced with Carl Forsman acting thing. You think about the directing program at all? Are you that kind of fella?
I didn't think about the program necessarily, but I knew I wanted to direct.
Okay, but you were like, I'm going to stick with the acting program as far as education goes.
Yeah, yeah.
You get out. How have your ambitions for what you want to do for yourself changed from when you left Houston and you had a certain idea about what you were going to do with right. your life?
Right.
And then you're like 22, leaving North Carolina to where?
27.
Where did you go?
Oh, here.
You came right to LA.
Yeah, yeah, right to LA.
Which is not the move everybody makes. So what is that thought process for you? How are you changing the way you're thinking about it?
That's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting because in my junior year high school yearbook, you know, it's like we all could get our little, or what you plan for the future, I guess. And I was like, I'm going to go to LA and act in film. So
that was what you were
that's
thinking.
That's what I did my junior year of high school. And then throughout college, I think maybe I was leaning toward New York because that's where everybody went. And then I had some opportunities like my junior and senior year that I think just led me to LA. And throughout, I would always like to write for intensive arts. And then probably my fourth year was the first time that I developed an idea for like a TV show. And that was like my first time being like, oh, okay. Like this is what I want to do. And I would say like, you know, comedy writing has become a big part of my life. And you know, like I can name, you know, Donald Glover and Rob McElhenney and Phoebe Waller-Bridge, like, as great, actor writers who have revolutionized the 30-minute comedy. And so that's something that I think I'm trying to head down that path.
They're doing the stuff that you could see yourself doing and being proud of what you're doing.
For sure.
Gotcha. That's sure. always the best question, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good that you have that identified now. You say you're 27 now?
Yeah.
You make it to the end of the year, you beat the curse.
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you're almost done.
I'm almost there.
I'll even do it where everyone can
Thanks.
Hear.
Yeah.
Of course, I want it for you. And if not, I got a very valuable final interview, you know? We'll see
this
what happens.
This is revolutionary stuff.
Yeah, we'll see. You got to get a lot done, man.
I know.
No,
that's always what I said. They're like, 27 Club. I'm like, yeah, but like no one would remember what I...
Right, right. She's like, I think I have to earn that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to do something people will remember me by... So that I can be in the club.
So I got like 6 months to really win an point. Oscar. Well, it's too late.
You should chill out then is the answer. You know what I mean? Don't do shit for the right. next 6 months. If you hit it big in the next 6 months, I would be very scared for you. Okay. You remain.
I'm going to take the rest of the year just to rest.
Yeah. Go live in the woods or something. You'd be safer.
Yeah. I don't know about safer in the woods.
Well, depending on your, you know, capacity. Yeah,
I'm
true.
Not good at survival.
No.
You don't want to
you
be.
You seem like the guy.
Really?
You've got the, no, you really
I
don't. I was trying to be nice.
I'm going to get a longer beard.
Sure. You do have excellent facial hair growth shape.
Oh, thank you.
I don't. It's a nightmare. You have like a nice thing. Does that grow out nice and full?
Nah, not so full.
You just have a really solid shadow.
It's the shadow. It's I'll give it like a couple weeks and then I'll kind of cut it back.
It's a really solid shadow, man.
Thank you.
So what's a show? I heard you name these people and I think I know the shows that they do. And
sure.
like, we're talking about Atlanta. We're talking about,
Fleabag.
Was Fleabag, as you said, Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Always Sunny. Barry. I think Barry's the
dude,
one.
Dude, let's talk about that for a second. How fucking great is that show?
Oh my gosh.
Came
out of nowhere. Bill Hader. I mean, funny guy. Like,
so I have this problem, Andrew, and you tell me if you deal with this as well. This is just a thing I think anyone who's creative has to deal with all the time. If you are interested in a specific medium, you're talking about these half-hour comedies. I totally agree with you. It is such a fun medium. I really, now that I've been working reality TV for a while, I don't really have much of an appetite to do narrative stuff
really?
For a living. But I like the idea of doing it like it's a summer vacation thing.
Mm.
Like I would love to work on a show or a film or write something and shoot it in between seasons of shit that pays my bills that I also really like.
Yeah.
But I don't think I would want to do it all the time because I tell people the tennis balls would ruin my life. Do you know what I mean when I say that?
I don't.
It's like I think the best, most recent example is Game of Thrones.
Sure.
They shoot that show. It's a beautiful show. It's a fun show, regardless of what you think of how it turned out. Obviously, a lot of people had a fun ride.
Oh, yeah.
So with all that being said, we all got to go on that ride, literally, on like dragons and shit. We're like, look, I fucking burning shit up with the dragons. But if you shot that show, you had to watch the queen pet a fucking tennis ball
right.
on a stick.
Okay.
That's their day at work.
Right.
And yeah, it's cool later when they get to see it and go, oh shit, they turned it into a dragon. Like, that's pretty okay. Right. But that's not as cool as it's Sunday night, it's 9 o'clock. Oh shit, a dragon. That's right. More fun. And I don't want anyone to take that away from me, Andrew. Right. I'm worried if I go, you know, people are like, oh, aren't you so happy for Jonathan? I'm like, of course I'm happy for Jonathan. I don't want to work with him there.
Right.
I want him to make it. It's even more fun when my friends are in my favorite things. I like that shit.
Right.
I get excited about it. I don't want to work there.
You don't want to ruin the illusion.
At this point, half of my favorite shit is all CGI anyway. Yeah. So if I'm going to be on set for it.
No, it'd ruin it.
I'm such a goober for like a Marvel movie or sure, a fucking, okay. I love that shit. I'm not, no. Bullet Train, did you see that?
Oh yeah.
Fun as shit.
So fun.
Full of not real shit.
Right.
And the camera's flipping around. I would rather just go.
Yeah.
And see it in the theater and be like, wow.
Right.
Like, be like, who wants to work at the magic store?
Yeah.
Just exactly. Go to the magic show.
Sure, sure.
You know?
Yeah, I like that.
But this half hour comedy shit is kind of the exception for me, where I'm like, man, if you called me and you were like, hey, dude, there's a part, or we need some creative consult producer, whatever, something.
Yeah.
But you're going to be on set with us for like 3 months working out on this show.
Yeah.
Dope. I would then be done. I would want to go back and do my shit.
Yeah.
I think.
Okay. What about like the rehearsal? I mean, that's
with
reality.
Nathan Fielder?
But that's like 30-minute comedy.
I was that's so crazy. I was just talking to Gus about this. Like, the episode that's probably going to come out right before yours, just talked about it. I don't know if we talked about it on air. Oh, shit. Maybe I'm alluding to something that didn't happen. I hate when they do that. Either way, how great is the fucking rehearsal?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Did you watch Nathan for You?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't watch all of it. I would watch pieces of it.
I don't know if I've seen every episode.
Who has seen all of that, man? That's a lot of cringe, bro. Yeah. But that show was so fun. I was working at Comedy Central while it was on. And we were always trying to pitch integrations and stuff like that. Because was like right after dumb Starbucks happened.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah.
Oh my God. He did the fake Starbucks. And then it was like a national news story. They got the lawsuit. If those who are listening, if you haven't heard this, please, please, please. Go watch The Rehearsal with Nathan Fielder. It is a single season series on HBO.
I think it got picked up for a second season. Oh,
fucking,
but
I hope so, yeah, man. Yeah. It is one of the most unpredictable things I've ever watched.
Right.
It is one of the most mind-bending things I've ever seen.
Right.
Because every single episode you're like, oh, I've got my head wrapped around this, I think.
Yeah.
And whether I mean like the narrative in the show or even how the show fucking works.
Right. And I mean, cause you're like, oh, is this like, he is like writing. He is like kind of controlling the narrative. And then some crazy shit happens where you're like, nah, that just happened. And he just like went with it.
You know what I always think of, and this is not like the greatest movie ever, but I think of it all the time. Like, it really made a dent in my head creatively of like, man, you left an impression of like, you're now the trope for that. You've seen The Prestige.
Yeah.
The Prestige with everybody, if you haven't seen this movie as well, we're just like throwing a lot of wrecks today. Hugh Jackman and Christian Bale and is it Rachel McAdams? Who's a girl? Scarlett Johansson? I can't remember.
David Bowie.
It's really about these two magicians like back in the 1800s or some shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't want to spoil the movie, but in a way you find out at the end that the reason one of these magicians is better than the other magician is because he lives a lie in a really elaborate way. And I think that's kind of how to say it without totally spoiling the film.
I was going to say, be careful.
I'm not going to say anymore, but he lives a lie in a really elaborate way. And it's all for his art form.
Yeah.
He doesn't do it and it cost him a fucking lot of stuff in his life, but he lives this elaborate lie so that he can be a great magician.
That's incredible.
I think about that shit all the time. And I think about the people who do that in other mediums. And I'm like, with Nathan Fielder, I'm like, how much of this is real?
I
get on the edge of my seat. I get tense about it. I'm like, are you fucking with me? Are there two of you or some shit?
Yeah.
Are you like some sort of like, I don't know.
He's a magician.
Is the whole thing scripted or is any of it real? And that's the thing about that show. And if you've made it this far, so listening to this, section is just that the whole point is he helps people rehearse real stuff they're going to do in their life that they're uncomfortable with. And he sets up a whole scenario with fake actors where they get to practice under like the most legitimate conditions. He makes the place they're going to do it in. He hires people to play the people they're going to confess to or whatever the fuck. And he sets up all these different situations, but you're thinking to yourself, you ruined the whole thing. Nope. I couldn't, you know how long it would take me to ruin this show for you? Because I would have to explain right. to you every little weird thing exactly. that happens that as soon as you think you have it figured out, it changes what you're doing. Dude, I would work on that show tomorrow.
Yeah.
But that's not really narrative.
No, no.
Or is it?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, he is on the cutting edge.
He's putting two things together that I think is so interesting. And I both want more people to experiment with stuff like this, and I don't, you know. And, you know, people have tried to do versions of this before that I don't think were as smart, and I don't want to discredit how hard they worked. Jamie Kennedy had a prank show called The Jamie Kennedy Experiment. Yeah, Experiment, I think. And he would, like, prank people in public with weird situations. Yeah.
Sacha Baron Cohen, I think.
Sacha Baron Cohen, obviously his films are one of the great examples of that. And really, really his stuff though is just being a character and creating a situation and just letting people react to it right. for real. But the kind of auspice of that whole idea is they are not trying to manipulate the people more than just putting on the show. What they're right. doing is their own choice to react to it however they do.
Right.
And the rehearsal is not that. It's like, it's the opposite. No, we're going
right.
to get in there.
He's the straight man, and he's like trying to create this world. It's wild. Yeah, check out the rehearsal.
You would work on something like that too?
Yeah.
What yeah. do you think would be, and you can maybe speak more abstractly so we don't focus on this one piece, but like, what do you think is cool about that to you that would be fun for you as a day-to-day job? You're getting paid. I'm going to pay you $2,500 a week as a producer right, on this show.
Right.
What are you doing every day, Andrew, that would be fulfilling to you, you think?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think specifically on a show like that, I mean, I don't even really know how a show like that would be run. But yeah.
That's important. I want you to keep talking. I'm going to come back to that in a second.
Sure. But I think, like just being with Nathan Fee. I don't know. Like, I think I would just like be his assistant. Like, I would do anything, you know, just
you'd
to
settle
like,
for just being in the room.
Yeah. Just to like watch, just to unwrap what's really going on there. Because again, with like a narrative thing, I'm like, I would love to be in the writer's room, or I'd love to, you know, be a showrunner, you know, something like that. But with, I mean, I think you could probably speak more to the reality. And is that set run more like a reality TV show, or is it run? Do they have
some
a writer's
of it
room?
Clearly has to be, because it does involve
babies.
Well, that, but I'm saying it does involve normal people right. who are not portraying anybody but themselves being on camera that they can see. Like cameras that there is some like security camera and found footage stuff, but like there's a lot of like people, guys with big cameras on their
right
shoulders pointing them at people who aren't actors and don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
And in that way, there have to be certain documentary rules, which the reality business is based, like not the business, the reality style is based on the documentary style.
Uh-huh.
Right. Handheld cameras that move around while you're watching them. Like not just on the shoulder, but follow people and shit like that.
Right.
You know,
but you're having to get a certain level of like permission.
Of course.
From these people. Well, but not specifically like we're going to do this.
Well, here's the thing, Andrew, is that in order to air someone on TV, you have to have their permission, but you can get that permission before or after.
Right. So it's not like, hey, look at this. We're going to show this. It's like, hey, you agreed that we could show whatever you do.
Yeah.
On camera.
Oh yeah. Dude, if you sign it before you're done. And there is argument where it's more, you can get into much more specific stuff for like, if they, quite obviously and non-ironically portray things that you 100% the opposite of did that, and it's really disparaging.
Hmm.
There's a possible, you like a defamation lawsuit or something and be like, this, they made me look like I threw a baby out the window. And right. I literally didn't do that. I didn't commit that crime. It made it look like, they did, you know, whatever, something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It starts to get that. But if it's like, if you said one thing and then at another time said something else, they move it around however they want. That's any TV show.
Right.
Like, they can move this scene over here and move this take over there. And I'm not spoiling anything about how anything's made for anyone. Right. This is how all television and film works. You right. shoot it in. Most films are not shot in chronological order. Like, none of them are.
Right.
Like, and that's true about everything else. Like, anything that's on TV.
And there has to be way more footage, especially in documentary and reality, where it's like, then they could just control the narrative however they see fit.
Sure. I think there's a lot of that going on. I can't speak to how any one show makes anything, right. Because they all work differently. And, I'm sure I legally can't talk about anything I've ever done. but I can say that to everybody about everything, which is like, it's all the same. It's all, once you record things, I mean, if you have footage on your phone, you know this. If you ever made a reel or cut together little pictures of your baby or your vacation, you can move them around like this, and you right. can put the stuff that happened at the end and the beginning. Like,
right.
So obviously you can do that with anything, anytime you want.
Yeah.
And if you're going to air it on television, you have to get their permission, and that can happen at any point in the process.
Right.
But if you do it afterwards and they've already done the crazy thing, what are the odds they're going to sign it? You know?
Yeah.
But they also cannot do the thing. They could leave, you know? It's yeah. the difference between like locking someone in a basement and like, hey man, you want to eat this weird thing? And they're like, no. Like, yeah, you have a choice. But I think a show like that would have to have some of that, but it also has to have a very strong creative team working with him to figure out how it's all going to be put together. Because obviously the narrative of a show like that plays like he's the mastermind.
Uh-huh. But there's...
he's got to have help. Jesus yeah, Christ, it's yeah. so complicated.
Right.
And why wouldn't you hire like... I wouldn't try to do something like that by myself. I yeah. would hire four of my like smartest fucking friends who are really funny
yeah.
to come in and help me do that. And a couple of people who specifically worked on my last show that was shot the same way.
Right.
Easy.
All right, so that's what, then what I would do. I'd be one of those close friends who he loves and looks up to. And
you've made it very personal. Yeah, I understand. I asked about your job, and you're like, right. I'd be his friend.
No, yeah.
I'd be paid $2,500 a week yeah, to be his friend.
To be like, do this.
Right.
Go bring that person in and well, fuck
here's,
with them.
Well, here's the thing that I can say about how things that are non-narrative work is anything that you ever make that is television – or a project at all, live theater, anything. If there's not a script, there still has to be creative. You have to come up with what's going to happen.
Right.
When they do a talk show, there's a script, but there also just might be loose ideas. Curb Your Enthusiasm, famously,
it's the best,
is not scripted.
Right.
There are shows like The Office that seem totally fucking off the cuff, and they're fully scripted.
Yeah.
So it's kind of all over the place. But even with shows that are like a, you know, or reality TV or documentary or whatever, a group of people have to get together and decide what the fuck it's going to be about.
Where are we going to point the camera?
Yeah.
And like, what are we going to
do? Well, and then what, why are we doing this? What is right. it? Sometimes that's one person, but usually there's a group of people coming together to talk about how they're going to cover something or what the story is here.
Yeah.
Especially if it's supposed to be like a journalistic documentary, you know? And this is what I'm getting at. This is why I'm like rambling on about all this stuff. And I have a reason for this, because you presented a great point. And it's something that I said when I graduated. And it's something that I said in my first interviews when I was getting into TV that got me all the jobs I have. People asked me what I wanted to do. And I said, like, later.
Mm.
Like, kind of like we just said. And you're like, I don't know, showrunner, be in a writer's room, sounds fun. Have you ever been in a writer's room?
No.
Okay. I said in those interviews, and I'm not correcting you. I am literally going down a path of we need to be having more conversations like this.
Mm.
I said in those interviews, I think I want to be a showrunner, but I don't know. Because I've never fucking been one. I think I do.
Yeah.
I could get that job. You know, when you're a little kid, you're like, I want to be president. I want to be an astronaut.
Right.
Are you claustrophobic? You don't want to be a fucking astronaut. Are you deal with stress and anxiety? Well, you don't want to be the fucking president. Right. Are you okay with like half of the entire country hating you? That's not fun, man. Right. You might want to surf or some shit.
Right.
Like, you know, you don't know the job until you get the job. And so.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think I'm not telling you what you want. You know what you want. But I think one of the things that I wish more people, especially even out of conservatory training, would give themselves permission to do is try more shit. Mm. Get yourself in that room. Go get that writer's room, PA, get coffee, people, job. Into your 30s, man. You're never too old for it, and you're never too cool for trying out a new thing, especially if you think you want to do it. Right. Go find out if it's true, and the only way to do that is to watch someone else do it. Damn. And you usually are not going to get to do that unless you're doing work underneath them that's less fun than the shit that they get to do.
Right.
That's like how everything works.
Yeah.
Everywhere. Not just art and entertainment, but TV is...
pecking order.
Well, it's a pecking order, but it's also... It's the only way to learn is you have to get in there and who's going to pay you to be like that person's boss or something.
Right.
You don't even know how they do their job.
Yeah.
You know, you got to get in there and watch. And too many people, I think, spend time. I don't know what your experience has been work wise, but too many of my friends and colleagues spend all their time catering for money so that they can keep their audition schedule open.
Right.
And I'm like, take an audition break for like 2 months and go PA on a TV show and like, maybe there's some other shit that you might want to do, because one day if you want to be like Reese Witherspoon and executive produce your own show, you might want to learn what a fucking executive producer does all day.
Right.
Because some of them aren't on set calling shots and picking out outfits or doing a, like, I like the set better or whatever you think is cool. They are watching cuts of the show over and over and over again and making notes about it.
Right.
That's what a lot of executive producers do. And then they hold a meeting where everyone yells at them because they're losing money and they're behind schedule. Like, that's does a great that, point. You may just want to be on the show.
Right.
It's like super fun to be on the show.
That sounds awful.
It's like, they look beautiful.
Right.
You never know.
That's a great point, man. And, it makes me think of artist strategy, which we can shout out because I did that as well and listened to you and talked to Joshua.
I love them. Mike.
Of course.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, you talked to Mike as well?
Here's the thing. It's interesting because Joshua was like kind of leaving school a couple of years after I moved to Winston-Salem. And then, of course, Mike came in after I'd been there for a few years. I directed Mike a bunch at school. Really close buddies, like while we were there. He was on the podcast before he did Artist Strategy, like back in 2019, I think.
Okay.
But when I worked with them, I talked to Mike.
Oh, nice.
He was like the person that was working with me, the console. Yeah, absolutely. And he was wonderful.
Yeah. He's a hustler.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's just such a good point, you know, and they're all about finding that secondary income and planning out your goals. And yeah, it's a great point. And I think that is definitely, cause I wait tables, you know, so I'm constantly like, hey, like, you know, I'd love to get on a set. I would love to, you know, be a PA. I would love to do anything because I have such, you know, I know where I want to be in 5 years, but like the week to week is where I think I could use a little work.
Well, let's get practical about this, because I'm not trying to like tell you what to do or even capable of helping you out, but I'm curious about the logistics of that. Like, so you're waiting tables in your head. You're like, I want to be fucking, you know, the next, all these people that you just said.
Right.
With a little Michael Schur, because let's face it, you don't look like any of those people you just said. You know, you're gonna bring your own thing to the table, but you are not yet in any of those rooms or on any of those sets, but you want to be. Do you have and I'm sure you talk to the guys about this, but what is your practical step to get that first thing? Because it really, dude, it's that.
Yeah, you just have to get the one, right?
One, dude. Yeah. If you don't totally fuck it up, and you may end up having dry spells, but once you get one, you're not someone there like, who the fuck are you?
It's like, no, I've done it.
Yeah. And if you can make at least one like good buddy who is a little bit higher up than you while you're there at that one job,
yeah,
whomever that might be, dude, that's how it starts. I tell it to everybody because that's how I did LA. I came out here. I thought I had all these fucking connects from Comedy Central. None of them worked out. And it ended up being this random thing that I got on one set for a show about surgery. Like, I don't want to be on a show about surgery, man. I'm kind of squeamish, dude. I didn't want that job, but that job paid my bills for a little bit. But everyone I met there, half the people I still know, and one of them led me to the job I had for like six seasons that established my resume.
Right.
And in between every season of that show, I got to go to other shows and be like, I work on that show. And people are like, oh shit. Okay, cool.
Right.
And it just snowballs from there.
Yeah.
You're going to hit ceilings and be like, how come I can't get to the next? Sure. Like, it's not fucking smooth sailing.
Sure.
But you'll find out real fucking quick if you want to be an executive producer of a half hour comedy, dude. You just need to go be on the set of one.
Absolutely.
So how do you do that? Like, literally, what do you do?
Yeah. I mean, I think connecting with writers, building a network of like executives who, you know, will think of me when they're trying to staff shows and, will think of me when they, you know, a writer's assistant job comes up or a PA director's assistant. You know.
Are you on any like networking websites for that? Have you ever been on Staff Me Up?
No.
Dude, you got to go on Staff Me Up, bro. Write it down. Staff Me Up is like a proper production Craigslist, basically. Okay. And they put full on legit, like, they'll put executive producer jobs on there. Wow. It's not, yeah.
Okay.
Well, because the turnover in LA on TV is just so high. I mean, even at the highest level, we're always looking for a new job. I'm not at the highest level. That sounded not accurate. We all, including people at the highest level and mine, are always looking for a new job because this shit just doesn't last forever. You know, the best shows in the world. They lately came out with a thing. They're like, four seasons is like, that's what Barry's going to do.
In Succession.
Yeah. That they're like, four seasons.
Thank God
that's
they're
what's
ending
up.
Those shows at four. Yeah. I mean,
great. Really, really good.
But now that they're all out of a job.
Now they all have to go get a fucking job.
Yeah.
And dude, I don't know what the packages are like now, but it doesn't pay like fucking Friends and Big Bang Theory to make a TV show anymore.
Right.
And it doesn't, you know, you're not a millionaire forever because you were on TV.
Right.
That's not a thing.
Yeah.
So now you got to go get another fucking job. So, but that's good news for you, dude, because that means they're hiring every other goddamn day.
Yeah.
I think that's absolutely a thing. You should also like, because this is the other thing. People always ask me, actors and people who want to work in production, they always ask me about narrative shit because someone wants to work in reality TV with me, man. But they're always asking me about that. I'm like, I don't know anything. I would easily throw a resume or hook you up with something if I could. And I think that's like, there's got to be someone else who would do the same for you just by playing the pickle card or some shit.
Right.
Who works in the part of the business that you want to work in.
Yeah.
You know, it's gotta be, something.
Yeah.
Cause there's a lot of them writers room PA jobs, dude.
Right.
And it's just shit work, but you listen and you watch.
Yeah.
And you might just learn you want to go surfing.
Right. And like, I hope let me move to the woods and be content. You know,
you learn just said you're no good in the woods,
but I'm going to learn. I'm going to learn how to make a fire and
whittle
my, weapons.
Do you have another thing? Like, do you ever feel isolated as an artist? Like, cause acting is such an important, fun thing for you. Do you have another thing that you like really dig?
No, I need, that's the thing. That's the search, you know, because in every 10-year reunion, you know, they would come back and you got to find something other than acting that you love. And I was like, writing? And it's like, well, no, it's basically the same.
It's not, but I get you.
No, like it's all like still in service of like my career, you know,
I need a
great hobby. And really, I did go to Yosemite for the first time in September and
like
actually camped and yeah, it was great. I mean, it was like 2 days.
You never camped before?
Not in that way.
What did that way mean? Like tents and shit?
Well, like in a national park with like, you know, you had to like, we couldn't like bring a cooler. You know, it was like, we had to like bring the astronaut food and boil water and.
Yeah. That's full on camping, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. So I like that. I mean, I rock climbed for a little bit, which was fun. I go skiing with my family.
Water or snow?
Snow. Yeah. I can't do the water.
You don't like water skiing?
No, I like it. I can't do it. I can't I'm not, I can't.
Like, you're not capable of doing it? How's that possible? You're like, love to go snow skiing, but you can't ski in the water?
Yeah, I don't know. It's something with like the, well, I've never tried water skiing, but the wakeboard, it's like, I can't get up.
Bro, I can't wakeboard. Okay. I can water ski. Oh, I haven't done it in a minute, but I grew up it's in easier. Texas, bro. We get the lakes. Fucking lakes. Yeah, that's what you do. 100%. That and tube the river.
Right.
Yeah, no, we definitely can water ski. I could never do the boards. And I can.
Well, that makes me feel better.
I can skateboard. Like, yeah. I grew up like riding longboards and stuff like that. I'm fine on that.
Yeah.
But the pushing both feet down and forward like that, for whatever reason, I was never capable of pulling that off.
I can't even, can't even stand up.
Just, you should do the one where they take the, I don't know what it's called, but they take two water skis and they tie them together with a little rope.
Oh.
So you're kind of like a little cartoon character guy. Oh,
that sounds fun.
That one's like the way to start. And then it's kind of like training wheels. And then eventually you take the little rope off and you water ski by yourself. But like, that's how I learned when I was a kid. And it was so much easier because I started, everyone in my family water skis on one water ski.
Wow.
They just put one foot in, they put the other one behind it. And then they like go on that. And I could never do that shit. So they gave me the little two with the rope.
Nice.
That's what you need, man.
All right.
We'll go water skiing together.
You got a boat? You gonna?
No. But we'll see. Here's the thing. You make some rich friends on your new set, right?
That's right.
We're all going to go water skiing together.
Let's put that on our manifestation board.
That's all you got to do, man. You just got to believe.
Yeah.
100%. I really appreciate you doing this, man.
Oh, it's been great.
It was super fun.
Great to get to know you and, a little better.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good to get to know you too. And it's also good to talk to somebody who's like heard the show before.
Absolutely.
Because that's not normal. I mean, you've probably seen the numbers.
I don't. I imagine it's in the millions at least.
Yeah, at least. And both of you guys are huge fans. I really appreciate it.
I listen to it a million times. That's why.
Oh, it's all you?
Yeah, yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Thanks for coming by, dude.
All right, man. Thank you.